Do you believe God can still do something in this world? I do. And if you believe God is still up to something, how can you not invite others into this? How can you not tell others the story of Jesus?
What if we asked God to help us move into this future? Maybe we could get ready for it.
It doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't happen on its own. I want you to not just talk about this amazing grace. I want you to be a carrier. You're the one who's going to speak hope to those who are giving up. You're the one who's going to champion the cause of the forgotten and the overlooked.
The church has to take the lead on this because we are the ones who have the last, only hope of the world. And we will do this together. And guess what? This could be our legacy. This could be a part of this church's legacy.
This is what enchants us. This is what captures our imagination. Now we hope again. Now we dream again. Now we refuse to give up. Now we will not give in.
Because you were made for purpose. You were made to actually accomplish something in this world. And so God says, I'm not just cleaning you up so that you can just sit here until heaven one day. I want you to get in the game. God said, then go. Go. Life's too short. Son, I'm not finished with you, this church, or this city, this world. So go.
We are called to get our hands dirty, to not look the other way when the world is in pain and when the world needs us.
Look around you. God's up to something. And we get to be a part of it.
Do you believe God can still do something in this world? I do.
So the truth is, some of us listen to something like that, and we get like worked up. We're like, where's the brick wall? I'll run through it. God's calling me to something. Let's go. Some of you, there's somebody who's sitting like not very far from you, maybe related to you, who is having the exact opposite reaction. They're saying, somebody tell that guy to settle down. You're not going to manipulate me. I'm not interested in your rah-rah speech, coach, right? So there are people on both ends of this spectrum, and then there are a whole bunch of us in the curious middle, just trying to figure out what this is about. So here are some of the questions that we're getting as we kind of walk through this. You know, so big picture, is this a teaching series? What's it about? Is it going to be funny? Am I going to cry? Should I be here if I'm new? What's about with this Grant's Trail business? Is it going to be more than a building in South County? And if it is, oh, please, is this going to turn into one of those, you know, whatchamacallit? Because if it is, why, oh, why, oh, why would we do that now? Now, listen, what you need to hear is that we're going to try to answer as many questions as we can throughout the coming days. In fact, I would like to, in the spirit of answering questions, to just go over those right there because they are very important. Those are good questions. So let me just be very direct with you and answer those. Partially, lots, sometimes, maybe, absolutely, right now. Oh, yeah, you betcha. And I'm so glad you asked. If we're clear on this, I'd like for us to pray. Father, we come before you now. Some people are excited. Some people have their arms folded and they are defending against something. They don't even know what's coming. God, you love us. May we hear your voice more than any other voice today, more than my voice, more than the world, more than old voices from our past. God, we want to hear your voice today as you now walk with us and speak to us. So thank you. Thanks for a whole bunch of people showing up in this kind of weather. God bless these people and their faithfulness. So thank you. In Jesus' name, I ask and pray these things. Amen. So now, I think you will get a pretty good idea of what the big picture is about and why we're excited. But in short, this is a five-part journey into our future. I mean, that's just the best way for me to put this. And yes, we are going to consider some things. And yes, that does mean, it really does mean that we need to consider something that other churches may not face. I'm going to say that we are blessed here. Let's just talk about us. I believe God's done some amazing things here. In fact, we have been privileged to see lightning strike. Amen. Okay, poor choice of words this weekend, but we have been showered with God's blessings. No. There is a flood of emotions when we see what God has done. We can do this for a while if you want. No, here's the thing. God has done something. And what's really extraordinary, if you look at the life of churches, it really did. I mean, lightning has, we've seen it strike again and again and again and again. Do you believe God can still do something in this world? I do. I believe God is doing something now. But the really extraordinary and interesting thing about what God does is that he oftentimes invites us into it with him. He doesn't need us. He does not need us. But all throughout the scriptures, what we see is that this God who created everything, in fact, some of the ancient sages would suggest that when the universe was spoken into existence, maybe God sang it into existence. I love that. So when this God who creates all of this and his creation is now marred with sin and rebellion, one of the things that he does is he begins this rescue mission and he invites people with him along the way. So for instance, one of my favorite stories in the Old Testament, Abraham, God comes to Abraham and says, you're gonna have a great family and your descendants will be so rich, so full, so prominent that they will bless the entire world. In fact, from you will come a blessing the likes of which the world has never seen. But now we're in Genesis 15, and Abraham doesn't have any kids. I mean, he's an old guy, and it's like no offense, God, but it's not happening. And then really I love chapter 15 of Genesis, because God says, come outside with me. He takes the old man outside. He says, now you look up at the nighttime sky. Try to count the stars if you can. Your descendants will be like those stars. This picture is so big, you have no idea what I'm up to. Fast forward a little bit later in the story in Exodus chapter 3. This is someone that we're familiar with, Moses. Remember, we studied Moses last year. So we're at the beginning of this. God is going to rescue his people from slavery. God is up to something. And so God calls this washed up shepherd on the backside of the desert. You remember the butane bush? Remember, it kind of starts up and he gets Moses' attention. And the first thing that God says to him, he said, I'm going to do this, but you're going to help me. I don't need your help, but I'm inviting you in. Join with me. Let's do this. In fact, Moses, such great things are going to happen. This is going to be so big. They're going to be making movies about you for years to come. It's a big deal. Matthew 28, Jesus doesn't need any help. This is after his resurrection. He's proven who he is. He looks at his followers, some of which, if you read Matthew 28, some of them are still trying to really make sense of the resurrection. They don't know what to do with Jesus. They're barely convinced, some of us. And he says, go teach, make disciples, tell my story, baptize people in the name of the triune God. Go. Now, Jesus didn't need our help to change the world, did he? But for some reason, God, in his infinite mercy, for his own good reason, invites us into this thing. Do you believe God can still do something? I do. He better. I don't know if you're noticing or not, but the world is showing its cracks. The world is not just broken, but it's becoming more and more apparent to us that it is broken. You see, there are people now who are, we can't even have conversations with each other anymore. The margins are so narrow, whether it's at work, whether it's around the family dinner table. It really, if you say the wrong thing, the entire room is polarized. Boom, right then. Little bitty disagreements now carve deep divides, and people don't know what to do with each other. We use technology to berate and bash people whose names we don't even know, and we make sure they don't know ours because we're hiding behind some false little whatever. Listen, we do this with each other. We live on the edge of war and rumors of war and outrage. There is violence that shocks us no more. We see images and deeds that should take our breath away, and we have grown indifferent to it all. And in disgust and defeat, there are people. I read an article this week where somebody said, in essence, this is, you heard this term? The new normal. You just got to get used to it. No, I don't. We don't have to stand for this. I am telling you, we can play it safe or we can move in. Harvard professor Dean Johnson puts it like this. He says, what we repeatedly see are systems breaking down, be they institutional systems, economic systems, political systems, environmental systems, to name but a few. But we all frustratingly ask, where is the leadership? Good question. Where is the leadership? Listen to me, whatever you think is going to address the ills of this world, with all due respect, and I think these other sectors are important, I really do. Some of us need to get involved there. But if you think the education sector or the business sector or the political sector, if you think those alone, the artist sector, if you think those alone are going to address this, I'm telling you, that's not the leadership that needs to show up. I'm telling you, the only people that have the answer are the followers of Jesus, the people of God. That's who needs to take the lead on this, which means we are going to step in. I believe this is one of those places where God, for his own, I don't even know why he chose us, where he says, let's do it again. Let's get involved again, which means we are being called to make a difference in our little community, but in this city for a long time, but not even just this city. We are going to lead national movements and dialogues that are going to be healing to some things that happen in our world. We are going over the course of the next few decades to leave a footprint of global proportions. And some of you are saying right now, well, that's crazy talk, preacher. Because we're just a little church. You should, don't you get the big head over that. Listen to me, as best I can tell, when you read the New Testament, that's the plan. Go to Acts chapter 1. We're in between the resurrection and Jesus returning to his Father. You know this verse. You will receive power, Jesus says to his followers, when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, when the very presence, the breath of God fills you and empowers you, which means you will not do this on your own. And you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth. If you know your geography, we've said this before, that means we start local and you work your way out. You start close to home and it goes all the way out. Why? Because there are people who need to hear about grace, because there are people who one more time need to know that God can be found, that forgiveness is real, that second chances are available. But there are also people near you and in places you will never get to that need to be fed and clothed and honored and served, all in the great name of Jesus. And some of those people one day will turn to him. Well, Greg, that sounds like you're evangelizing. I am. Thank you for noticing. But you weren't supposed to do that anymore. That's politically incorrect to say evangelism. I get it. I get why people have abused that word, misused that word. I get some of the horrible images that are popping up in some of your heads. But if you go back to the original term and the meaning of the word evangelism or evangelist, it is quite simply delivering good news. Don't you think the people around you need to hear good news? You see, the church is the last best hope of the world. Why? Not because of us, not because of our music or our buildings or our lights or our staff or our amazing volunteers, not because of any of that. It is because we are the only ones who have been entrusted with the antidote to what this world is suffering from. It's Jesus. It's always Jesus. If you're joining us now after Easter, I warned you, it will always come back to Jesus, didn't I? It's Jesus. It's always Jesus. So when Peter now preaches the message of a lifetime, he's at the temple. A crowd has gathered. Tim brilliantly unpacked this last week. What was his message? It's Jesus. It's always Jesus. Turn to Jesus, repent, and be baptized. And 3,000 people believed that day. I would call that a good day, by the way. And they're baptized, and the church is born, and the world changed. I would say in the coming decades, when Paul took that same message across the Roman Empire, the world changed again. I would say God was up to something when a few people in a living room years ago said, well, what if God did something in St. Louis? And what if there was a church that he could birth where people from all over the spiritual map could come together and learn who this Jesus is in a way that maybe they weren't finding explanations in other places? I believe God was up to something in the really early hours of Sunday mornings when people would gather and show up at Marquette High School. And when I say early hours, I mean for many of them, it was before dawn. And they would show up and they would, there was an old dilapidated bread truck that had all of the equipment in it because we were turning classrooms into nurseries. We were hanging lights, putting speakers up, making coffee, hanging all sorts of stuff, just doing all of that. You did it before everybody got there. The first miracle of Sunday morning would be when the truck actually started. That was the first miracle. Second miracle was, and if you ever saw this thing, some of you know it, the second miracle was that it actually got to the, you know, to the high school. And then people started hanging and lights and all of this stuff. And it was so efficient because it was like you didn't want to make multiple trips. And so we hung all of these lights on these huge, heavy steel bars. And so you would see guys get out of that truck, and there'd be a guy in the front and a guy on the back, and they'd have all of the equipment, all of the stuff, everything. And they would just take it into the high school. And they would just like, and they would just, they hang that stuff up. You put it all up. The next miracle would be if people showed up. And sometimes it'd be a good day. You might have 100, 150 people there. Some days it was less than that. But when everybody went home Sunday afternoon, those same people took all of that stuff down, packed it into a bread truck, and got home sometime middle of the afternoon on Sunday. God was up to something. God was up to something in, I'd say, 1998, when people really started showing up. Now we're at the YMCA, and people started showing up and inviting their friends. And we actually went to two services. I told you a little bit about that a few weeks ago, and it was a cool thing. And we were kind of starting to not feel crazy at that point. People were going, hey, maybe this did work. Way to go, God. And there were stories of life change, and we were blessed. We were grateful. God had done something. We saw lightning strike. But there was a moment there where we began to see two futures. I'm going to show you what that is by drawing a chart, a graph. And some of you have been around here long enough. I've lost count of how many times I've drawn this graph over 20 years, and it is still our story. You see, we were so grateful that God had done so many things. We had all of these stories. We had a choice right here. We could have said, hey, those of us that made it in, we made it in, and we mostly know each other, and we've all got a seat. Let's lock the door behind us, and we'll coast our way into heaven. Because God, you did it. We saw lightning strike. But what we began to realize was, if that's what we did, if we turned this into a not very holy huddle, then what would happen is the stories would level out. Eventually, they would taper off, and we would soon become one of those places that speaks in the past tense. You ever been around a place like that? It all starts with sentences like, hey, you remember how we used to, hey, you remember what God did? Hey, back in the day, that could have been our future. Or we could take the biggest risk of our lifetime. We could join God in this adventure and see what might happen if we trusted him. And if we did, we would go in a different direction. And when I say that this tells the story of this church, you've got to hear me. I am not saying that we got suckered into some big growth kind of a strategy where we said, we just want to be a part of a winning team where everything's going up and to the right. No, the punchline to this thing that still takes my breath away, the whole reason for this, you want to know how any of these facilities, how any of this happened, how you're watching even online, it comes down to this. It's the difference between, it's the space between those two lines. Do you know what that space represents? It represents people who never heard, who never had a seed, who never had an opportunity, who were never invited into the story because we didn't take the risk. But if we took the risk, then this could happen again. You see, we did this for people we didn't even know yet. I watched people give sacrificially, dream big dreams, say, yeah, let's go. And they did it for people they didn't even know yet. And it happened. We move into the place in Chesterfield. We run out of room. We go to the second service. We were already starting that. Then we run out of room. We'd go to a Saturday night service. We asked a bunch of folks, will you start worshiping on Saturday night? People said, it's crazy. You can't do that. We go to a second Saturday service. We knocked out a wall. We added 300 seats. We still didn't have room. And here's how it happened in Fenton. So let me just say to those of you watching at Fenton right now, would you turn around, just right now, just everybody look around the room. Go ahead. Just look around wherever you are. Not you guys. You're not in Fenton. So there are a couple of geographically challenged people. It's not you. I'm talking to them. Are you? Some of you still haven't. Turn around. Look. You doing it? Don't talk to each other. Some of you are talking to each other. There are heroes and pioneers that you just caught a vision of. Because a few years ago, there were folks who said, we're going to leave Chesterfield, and we're going to miss you, and you're going to miss us, but we're going to go plant something closer to home for us, and we'll see God do it again. That's how the Crossing at Fenton exists. By the way, Mid Rivers, you did the exact same thing just a couple years later, and there were folks that are in your midst who said, okay, now we go, and we're going to plant this thing closer to home. And that's what has happened. It happens around here all the time. People just say, okay, so we're going to do this. Now listen to me. It doesn't make sense to others why we do this. But our dream, our hope, our goal has always been, what if we give people a chance to hear about the amazing grace of Jesus? Will they show up? And by golly, they show up. They keep showing up. In fact, since the last time we had a conversation like this, which was in 2011, thanks for asking, we've grown by 50%, 50%. Now, gang, large churches don't keep throwing numbers like that out there. For you math geeks, why is that? Because the denominator is too big. When you already have thousands of people, it's hard to grow by 50%. By the way, I'm not even including the 2,000 or so folks that join us regionally, not internationally, regionally online every week. I know people, have talked with them, people who say the Crossing is my church, but I'm not, for a whole bunch of reasons, I'm not coming to a facility. I have no plans to. So there are people who are calling this place home. If we included those 2,000 people, we've actually grown by 90%. Let me put it to you this way. Those of you at Mid Rivers right now, there are more people that attend Mid Rivers on an average weekend, more people that attend there than were going here at Chesterfield when we first showed up in our first building. And we thought God had done a mighty work then. We thought we were home. It was like, God, thank you. You did it again. We had no idea what was going to happen at Mid Rivers. Those of you in Fenton, you're not just out of room. There are times at optimal service times when you're turning people not just away from the auditorium, but away from the building. You're busting at the seams. But it's not just numbers. I know people get creeped out by numbers. Some of you right now are going, we better not be beating our chest on this thing. We're not. I'll just try to say this as clearly as I know how. We don't deserve a lick of this. I don't deserve this. You get up next to me, it makes no sense why this is happening. This is God and His grace. God's doing something. We're just gonna pay attention to it, that's all. And by the way, it's not just people showing up. It's people who are learning who Jesus is, responding to His grace, and then moving deeper into their faith. They're taking classes. They're learning more about His word. They're entering into 242 groups. They're getting involved around the community. Their marriages are different. Some of you are treating your finances differently. Some of you have walked through serious stages of grief now differently. There's all sorts of stuff that's happening. We have an entire group of young scholars on staff who are developing these classes for people that I would frankly call graduate level classes, dealing with issues of eternity and what does it look like and how does that work. There's one whole class that covers the story arc of the entire Bible. And this class is quite honestly, and this is the dream of some of these guys as we've talked, is to raise up a whole bunch of young, old theologians. You never went to seminary, but you know how to rightly divide the word of truth. That stuff is happening around here, but it starts really young, really young. There were two stories that came out of Easter that I thought were just like really specific stories to Easter. Yeah, I'm thinking back, by the way, when we had Easter at Marquette High School one year, there was like, we broke 300. We had 300 people who showed up for Easter. We did an Easter jig. You're throwing eggs in here? No, I don't even know what an Easter jig is. But anyway, the point is this. That was a big deal, 300 people. This past Easter, we had 17,000 people show up at each of our sites and venues, not counting the people online. Listen to me. Two stories from this Easter. The first was worship. Worship. The worship was so loud. Each room, each site, each service time, I had people saying, I've never heard us worship like that before. Was anybody here when we sang The Great I Am? Do you remember that? Do you remember how loud it was? It's the loudest I've ever heard. I will say, if anyone was here for the very first of our Easter services on that Friday, I don't know if you were here or not. Was anybody here for that first Friday service in any of our sites? Wherever you are, raise your hand. I just want to apologize to you because here's the thing. I was sitting over here and I was so overwhelmed by the sound of the worship. It was just like waves of, it was unbelievable. I'm like, God, what are you doing? I completely lost my train. I did not say what I was supposed to say when I got up there. I don't even know what I said. I was so overwhelmed. Go back and check the tape. I just kind of staggered up there. I might have said Happy Hanukkah. I honestly don't remember. I was just overwhelmed. God be praised. So now it's later, Friday night, after these services, we're hearing from the sites, everybody's celebrating, going, God's doing something in our midst again. And then all of a sudden, it started, first with the workers, then with the parents, of some of the amazing things that continue to happen in our kids' ministries. And one of the things that just kept coming up that weekend from both our leaders and our parents was, our kids are worshiping with such passion. Now, I didn't know this. We're not smart enough to do this. But almost to the minute, there's a little bit of a change there, difference there, but almost at the same time that we were singing The Great I Am, those kids were singing The Great I Am. Same song, same God, same passion, same worship. I wish you could have seen the look on all of these faces of people just coming to me and going, oh, man, yes. I wish you could have heard the stories of parents that have told me this. I wish each of us could have gone back there and I wish we could hear the voices. So I had one person, can you just run back there with your iPhone? Because I got to hear this. This is one service, one room, one site. Dozens and dozens and dozens of kids in each one of these rooms singing full-throated, hands raised, hearing a message that makes sense to them. But do you know what that is the sound of? That is the sound of good news. When I see parents tearfully, even now, right now, when I see parents come to me with great joy and say, my kids are learning, my kids are getting this, my kids are singing these songs, you know what that is? That is the sound of the next generation saying the king is on the move. And we get to be a part of it. So here we go. Why would we make more room? Grant's Trail, what is Grant's Trail? Well, Grant's Trail is, let me just show you what this looks like, because, and you're going, well, that doesn't help me at all. You're right, but it's pretty, isn't it? I mean, it is all color-coded and everything. If you got up close, here's what you would notice about this plan. It's been informed by our previous sites at Mid Rivers, Fenton folks. Some of this stuff would look really familiar because we've learned from this. So we're trying to squeeze every square foot out of this that we can. We're trying to value engineer every dollar we can out of the cost. But this is what it'll look like if you drive up to Grant's Trail. So you'd look and go, wait, that looks like a lot of our other places too. Yeah, in some ways it really does, because we are one church, many locations. But the people, the stories, what's going to happen, completely different. You see, now it's your turn, Fenton, to do what people did for you and what some of you did for Mid Rivers. It's your turn. There are people that will now move into an area, there are people that will now launch a church, and the stories there will change us. The stories there, I can't wait. This is what we get to do. And yes, that means that we're now going to have to figure out how we make room for people whose names we don't even know and watch what God does one more time. And we will have to now, many of us, figure out how we're going to get involved in every possible way, including financially. And yes, that means this is one of those whatchamacallits. We are now going to prayerfully for 5 weeks, and I'm going to talk about it all 5 weeks, but we are going to consider what does it mean for us to get involved even in those ways to make stuff like this happen. And so some people would call a thing like this a capital campaign. I was afraid he was going to say that. Some of you are looking for the exits right now. I know how you people think. I know how you people think. Some of you are calculating your escape right now. Here's what it sounds like in your head. I'm not listening even to the rest of what he's saying. So listen, when he does that little talk to your neighbor thing in just a second where we have an interaction, we are making a break for it, right? That's what some of you are thinking. Which is why, by the way, we do not have any interactions planned for this service. You guys think I'm kidding, don't you? Just wait. No, listen, I want to be very honest with you. I know I can understand why some of you would have the reactions that you're having. because you've seen this happen before. You've seen this happen, like say at a, maybe it's a school, maybe it's a volunteer, a service organization. It might be another church and you saw things and what you saw was great. Now for 5 weeks, this bozo's gonna guilt me, manipulate me and twist my arm for money. You've seen this before. I'll go you one further. Some of you were actually on the inside of an organization trying to help raise capital. And you heard really ugly stories. You saw really snarky comments made. It was very manipulative. It was very not good. And you're making the jump and saying, I'll bet you that's how it works here. What if it didn't? What if there was more, what if there was a different way to do this? You see, if you've seen something happen and it didn't happen well, first of all, I'm sorry. Second of all, I completely understand the scrunch in the seat of your pants right about now. But what if God surprised you? You see, in the coming weeks, we'll talk about this openly. We'll answer as many questions as we can. But you're not going to see me twist your arm. In fact, what we're going to do is we're going to tell the story of God and what it means to follow him in. You'll hear lots and lots of stories. For those of you who are new, let me just say this. Like, you've started coming in the last few weeks. Some of you right now are going, oh, man, we just started coming after Easter, and now I get a five-week telethon? No. No, and here's, I'm gonna, this is easy for you. If you just started attending here, write this down, I mean this. Don't give. Don't give. Now, there's some other people in the room going, oh, if they wanna give, let them give. No, don't you remember what we're about? Come on, no, that's not how this works. For those of you who are now just attending, you know what you do? You know what your first step is? You need to receive. You need to hear of God's love and then see what it's like to respond to God's love. There's plenty of time for the rest of this story. But right now, you need to understand that more than anything, God loves you. That's where this starts. That's why all of this exists. You start there. But I know, honestly, no matter how many times I say this now, I'm going to be misquoted, I'm going to be misrepresented, I'm going to be misunderstood. And you got to know, like, preachers hate being misunderstood because we think we're saying things so clearly and it's like, why didn't you get that? You know, I mean, we work really hard and we have these illustrations and we try to make stuff so that it, oh yeah, that all made sense. It's like the old guy that heard that, you know, that he was trying to kind of, you know, spice up his message. And he's like, well, I hear sometimes people use props. I'm going to use props when I teach this week. So he's got all these mason jars lined up and he's trying to tell people about the dangers of living in this world. What is it like to live a holy life? What is it like to be sanctified? And so before he gets into the word, before he does an amazing exegesis of all of these passages, before he does any of that, he's got these live earthworms and he's got these jars. The first one's full of beer. He takes a worm, drops it in there, closes it up. Second one's full of chocolate syrup, drops the worm in, closes it up. Third one has like lit cigarettes. The whole thing's full of smoke. Drops the worm in, closes it up. Last one is full of just lush, dark, loamy, fertile, rich soil. Drops the worm in. Teaches what he thinks is an amazing message at the end of it. Now he goes, let's go back to our examples, our illustration. Pulls a worm out of the beer, it's dead. Pulls the worm out of the chocolate syrup, it's dead. Pulls the worm out of the cigarette smoke, it's dead. Pulls the worm out of the rich, lush soil. It's fat and happy. It's living large. He figures he's made it. Do you see? Do you people see what I'm talking about? Do you see? Do you see? There's a lady in the back and says, yes, preacher, I see. As long as I keep drinking beer, eating chocolate, and smoking, I'll never get worms. You know, if I laugh, I'll keep telling jokes like that. Do you know what the point is? Here's the point. No matter how hard I try, somebody's gonna misunderstand what I'm trying to say. I get that. In fact, some of you are gonna leave and not come back. It'll happen. Sure. I don't want it to. I want us to go into this together and to see if we can figure this out. I'm asking you, if you would, to hold off on some of those things until we get through this. I'm not gonna push you on a number. I'm not gonna any of that. Let's see what God's up to. By the way, it's bigger than what you think it is. You know, there are people who get really excited about Grants Trail, and you should, because it's going to help us in that area. It's going to create room for people in Fenton to invite their friends. There's more stuff to it. I'm not going to give you a lot of it now. There's office space and training space. Fenton's going to get 50% more offices and meeting space because they need that. There's lots more stuff. There's a really cool thing that I'll show you next week that I think all of the sites can use. But the truth is, it's more than bricks and mortar. Some of you get excited about bricks and mortar because that's what you invest in. That's concrete. I can do that. Okay. But some of you are at a place right now where you're going, it's got to be more than that. It is. You see, the first bucket, there's like three buckets. The first of these is our heartbeat. It's our evangelism. I've explained that to you. The second one is that we have a very good track record of what I would call partnerships. We do not think that we are the only people in town that are doing something, the only people in the world that are doing something for God. And we love coming alongside other people. We've had folks, some of you say, we shouldn't give our money away like that. We should keep it all for ourselves. That is not what we have been led to. We believe we're going to be kingdom entrepreneurs. And we don't just throw money out the window driving through a neighborhood. These are board protected, vetted, and staff led sort of projects and things like that. But we will now get involved with other people. Living Water, you know about, but it's more than water. We're planting churches across Zimbabwe. We're leading and raising up leaders, doing pastor and leadership development there. We're about to get involved with an organization that's going to help us with some microfinancing there in Zimbabwe. And fellas, I'm sorry, but so far it's the women in these villages that are more interested. It's the women who are saying, wait, I don't have to hike 10 miles one way for water that's going to make my family sick. Now I have some time. I want to start a business so that I can be free, so that I can actually, okay, let's help with that. You understand that there are kids, and the research is out there. When you start talking about post-trauma stress, you start talking about the long-term effects 20, 30 years from now, why a child makes the decisions they do later in life. It is important for children in war-torn areas to have even a little bit of time in a kid-friendly space where they can laugh and play games and sing and color and be like all of your kids instead of dodging bombs and scrounging for food. And so we have been partnering with an organization where we are doing this on the border of Syria and Lebanon. These are not families that are coming here. Don't get into that. These are people who are longing to go back home. And in the meantime, they are in a hellish situation. But we can serve these kids. What about this? You know our whole project with literacy and what's happening in strategic school districts. I think you've probably also heard us talk about our passion for bridging divides in this city. One of them chiefly is with the perception of law enforcement and particular neighborhoods where it's just there's a difficult divide there. We're looking for every way we can to bridge these gaps. What if it came through literacy? The whole Dr. Seuss day, and so when we talk about how, you know, we're going to you read Dr. Seuss on his birthday, and it's kind of a cool thing a few weeks ago, and schools do that. Well, some folks on our team said, well, why don't we use that as an excuse to bridge a divide? So now what happened on Dr. Seuss day was uniformed officers, men and women in uniform. These are the people you don't want to live in a community without law enforcement. But there are also kids in certain neighborhoods for a host of reasons who don't know what to do with law enforcement. But what if we had law enforcement officers coming into those schools, fully uniformed, gun on their hip, and they're going to read Dr. Seuss books to these little third graders? And what if while they're doing that, they actually wear a goofy 2-foot-high red and white striped hat? Do you understand that when people in power humble themselves, something happens? A healing begins to happen on both sides of the divide. So when a young person comes up to that officer and says, and I quote, when I grow up, I want to be like you, that's a win. And the cynic in the room says, well, that's not going to change the world. No, but if you pile up enough of those, now we're getting somewhere. And if we can't take the long view, who will? We are the people who have hope. We are the people who know God is in charge of all of this. Can't we look forward on this? Can't you and I say, this isn't even going to happen in our lifetime. And it won't. It'll happen in our kids and in our grandkids' lifetime, where they are the ones who see and reap the benefits of a city that is beginning to heal. We're the only people that are going to do this. We are the ones who can take the long view. Come on. I'm tired of St. Louis being the punchline to a bad joke. I'm tired of us being a national example of, well, that's how you shouldn't do it. What if someday your grandkids and their kids got to tell the story of a different city and a different kind of coming together? And what if when you traced it all back, it wasn't a political answer, it wasn't a financial answer, it wasn't a government answer, it wasn't even an education answer. What if your grandkids and their kids someday when they hear the story of how St. Louis is different, it all traced back to the people of God? You want something big? That's big. The only way this works is if we take the long view. It's the only way it works. Exodus 3, when God speaks to Moses, you want to know the first thing he says? I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Do you know what the Eternal One is saying there? I span the generations. So the third bucket for us is we are going to intentionally invest in our future generations. With relationships we have with noted universities and colleges and a world-renowned research organization, we are in the process of thinking through new communication strategies for a future generation and what it means to develop a pipeline of young leaders so that they will start showing up and further our legacy. I know that sounds squishy for some of you, but the opportunities are real, the organizations are real, and we're gonna do this. We're gonna do this. I'll give you just one example. We have close to 200,000 views on our, each year in our, of our service. And when I say views, the math on that, you know, I don't know what it is, the metrics, like I think it's 2.1. We always usually take a really conservative estimate of how many people are watching online per view. But let's say it's easily between 250,000 and 500,000 people join us every year. You're doing it right now. Now, what is that? Are we going to be a church that tries to minister to 500,000 people? No. But we are going to try to figure out what it means to engage people spiritually who are joining us in a non-traditional way. Now, for those of you who are watching on Facebook Live right now, you know what I'm talking about. Some of the rest of you, when you're out of town, you should try it sometime. Because when we get into a process where we're now talking about, let's just say that we're talking about pain. Let's say that we're talking about something that is real, a struggle that's going on in life. You watch the comments that will begin to happen. Well, what about this? How about that? What does this mean? Okay, we have to figure out how we're going to minister to people who are joining us in a completely different way. Now, some of you old timers are saying, but that's not church. That doesn't count. They didn't get up. They didn't get dressed. They didn't put their Sunday go-to-meeting clothes on, and they didn't get here. Well, that would be the old way to think about it, wouldn't it? Let's be different. Let's be different. It's like the guy that's walking into the old country store and he sees beware of dog sign. He gets inside and all he sees is an old lifeless hound just asleep in the middle of the floor. And the guy says to the old timer, he's like, so is this the dog that's so dangerous that I'm supposed to be aware of him? And he goes, well, before I put the sign out, people kept tripping over him. Listen to me. The church at large is not going to get bitten by the future. But the church at large is in danger of tripping over its future. It's right in front of us, and we're not looking. We're not paying attention. Around here, we will. It'll affect how we do things. It might even begin to inform how we teach and how we communicate with a new generation to the point where your kids, your grandkids, and their kids will experience, learn, process information differently than you are, and we want to be on the front edge of that wave. So how does all this add up? What's that all that mean? Man, you got all that stuff. What is it? You ready? Our goal, our prayerful goal that we've looked at, $20 million. It's $20 million. I have the best seat in the house, by the way. Because I get to see everybody's reaction, and I can almost guarantee you in the hub at Fenton, Mid Rivers, it's the same thing. Some of you are just like, yep, that's just about right. Some of you should never play poker. Because like it was the cartoon, the eyeballs is like, bing, you know that. Some of you just threw up in your mouth. Some of you are angry. Some of you have questions. It's all over the map. How are we going to do this? Listen to me. I want you to get all the information that you need, okay? There's another part to this that is when it comes to the legacy part of this is that we have a certain amount of debt that we acquired getting into the game. We're upfront about that. We tell you that at the vision dinners. We tell you about that. It's on the website every day, has been for years. But we have some debt that we want to pay down for future generations. If you look at our balance sheet, it's kind of extraordinary. $35 million in assets. $10.8 million annual budget that we'll hit that. We have 13.7 in debt, which is well within the range of churches of our size and focus, but we want to push that down. It's about 12% of our annual operating budget. Think of it as our house note. Many of you, most of you have a house note. You don't want it to be so big that it defines everything else. This doesn't define us. We know how to save money. We know how to be good stewards. But what if together we paid that down? You see, that $20 million includes a very generous legacy payment towards that. All of this moves us forward. But you have more questions, and we want to help you with that. So in just a second, when you leave here, we'll give you a really colorful, cool booklet that'll summarize everything I went through really fast. You'll have a chance to look at that, ask whatever questions. We'll have some Q&As in May that you can kind of you can come to and ask whatever you want to ask. I would say go to the website, that glorious website, right? Thecrossing.church. You should look at that. See if we can help with that. When you get one of these booklets, nobody's going to take your name. Nobody's going to make you sign something. There's no tracking chip in the back of it. We're not going to show up at your doorstep. This is for you to have some information. But here's the thing. It'll be your choice. And now I want to be your pastor for just a second. Don't bail. Don't miss it. Don't be cynical. Nobody's going to twist your arm. Nobody's going to tell you to do this. But just don't be cynical. No hot air on social media. If you have a question, come ask us. No conspiracy theories. No, well, I'll bet. Well, this is how it works. Don't do that. Just come. Let's be different than the rest of the world. That'd be something, wouldn't it? We'll all shoot for this thing. We'll talk about it. And we're really just shooting for a 3-year pledge that would start July 1st. That's it. All the information's in there. We're going to gather together at Chaffetz Arena, which is on SLU's campus, June 4th. All of us, one service, no services, any other site. We're all going to be there. Come, the kids, the grandkids, you know, young, old, everybody, big, huge worship. It's going to be great. You want to be there June 4th. You want to be there for that. We will celebrate that, and we will all bring whatever God has led us to do to that thing, just a commitment card. But that's it. But again, can I be your pastor just for a second? This isn't about money. I mean, it is, but it isn't. I want you to know joy as you go through this, because some of you feel like this is just going to be, oh, I'm going to do this out of obligation. Some of you have already come up with a number in your head. Next week, I'm going to show you kind of how we're doing that. Robin and I are going to tell a little bit of our story, but let go of the number right now. This is a journey between you and God. I promise, there's plenty of time on them. Just let that, don't even think about numbers yet. This is a journey with you and God. And with that in mind, here's this. I want you to watch this. Some of you have seen this. You're going to think this is great. This is not the way you should be ending. You should. In fact, I've actually been told, not by leaders here, but I've been told by others who mean well, you should go for it at the end of this first one, man. I mean, deliver the goods. No, I want to be your pastor. I want you to find joy in all of this, which means a goofy illustration. I hope you get it. This was at a Q&A at Vanderbilt University with a guy named Billy Joel. Some of you are old enough to know Billy Joel.
Are they all pointing to you?
This is a young student. He's a freshman at Vanderbilt.
My favorite song of yours is New York State of Mind. I've been very fortunate. I was able to play with Richie Cannata many times in New York City, and I was wondering if I could play with you. I would accompany you, that is. Okay. You guys, what do you play? Play piano? What key do you do it in? Go down a hole. Wait, C. Do it C. Hang on one second. Hang on.
All right, so there's an article about this. Some of you have said this, but He said, I walked up and we spoke about the arrangement for about 15 seconds. He went through what he wanted me to play. And he says, and then from there, it was foggy. I was just trying to remember. This is just a composer, that a guy I've always looked up to. And I just wanted to do this with him. As you probably were looking at Billy Joel, it's the kid that's the point of the story. And you have more in common with this brash college kid than you think you do. Because somebody's like, well, wait, what do I have in common with? Do you know what he wanted to do? He wanted to bring his very best and really present it to the composer. What a cool thing. Listen to me. If you walk out of here in just a second and think the big picture is about money, then I didn't say it well, or maybe you had some stuff that was getting in the way of it. But it's not just about money. I mean, you were made to laugh and to love and to learn and to serve and to give things away at outrageous levels and to answer questions gently and to move through this life and to make a dent. That's what you were made for. That's what you long for. That's what enchants us. So when we talk about bringing our best, like our time and our talent and yes, even our treasures into this thing one more time, we won't do it out of guilt. We won't do it out of shame. We won't do it because the guy up front is squeezing us for this. That never works. You know why we will do this? We will do this because we want to bring our best to the one who sang the universe into existence. Do you know why we are doing this? Because we're grateful. I mean, many of us are. Somebody made room for us. Somebody invited us to church. Somebody really patiently just answered a whole bunch of questions. And honestly, there's a whole bunch of us that are just not over God's grace. This is what enchants us. This is why we don't give in. This is why we won't give up. We get to do this now with the one who wrote the song. Do you believe God can still do something in this world? I do. Father, I pray that you will bless these folks. I pray as they leave here, that the voice they hear is yours, not mine, yours, not the world's, yours, not all of those cynical things that happened in their past. God, may we hear your voice and remember we get to do this with you for your glory in the name of your Son. Amen.